My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We're coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
It is Payne and Pendergast, but no Sean Pendergast. Brandon Scott in here with
Thank
Seth
God.
Payne.
I needed a break. Hey, man, I needed a break from Sean.
Get the hell out of here, Sean, man. Let me get in here and stretch out a little bit. I appreciate Sean actually for allowing me to keep the seat warm for him. But, you know, in the spirit of Sean's absence, I'm going to keep with a little bit of the theme of the show here, Seth. Did you hear the good news?
Good call.
Have you heard the good news?
I heard about this.
There are actual multiple spots of good news that we have here today, Seth.
So layers on layers of good news.
Layers of good news. On the A page, on the B section, doesn't matter. You've got the Texans with a roster, pretty much with a full roster, or maybe a couple of practice squad spots that they need to fill, Seth. But for the most part, they've got a roster. But even bigger than that, the good news, Seth. Last night, your Houston Astros took care of business. Or not even last night, it was yesterday, during the day. Took care of business. It was basically, Seth, batting practice on one end for the Astros, and then Spencer Arrighetti carrying a no-hitter into the eighth. And almost pulled it off. Almost pulled it off, man.
It was almost pulled it off, and then I feel bad for Whitcomb, man. So Whitcomb misses a little grounder to third. Pena hoovers it up behind him. But, man, especially after you see Dubon make the incredible play in center field in the seventh inning, it just had all the feel of, look at this. These guys are rallying behind the young pitcher who had a 5-plus ERA through the first part of the season, but it's been a 2.5 ERA in the month of August, and everything was lining up perfectly for perhaps one for the ages, but a really, really nice day for Spencer Arrighetti, and then Whitcomb whiffs on the potential easy out at first. So, but otherwise, though, too, I mean, you know, the first inning when Jordan was not pitched to and they walked him. I thought, oh, you cowards. Will you just come on? Go test yourself. And then they went ahead and tested themselves, and Jordan hit 3 home runs in a row in his next 3 at-bats.
Yeah,
that was pretty sweet.
I think that Jordan validated their decision or feeling of not wanting to test him, and I definitely want to get into Spencer Arrighetti's performance, what it means, what it represents for the Astros in the next segment at 6:20. But you mentioned Wickham, and I loved consuming this in the moment. I was watching the game and listening to the drive at the same time. And, of course, Clint Sterner, our guy, says right there in the moment, as soon as Wickham has this, you know, this faux pas, if you will, and I don't even know if you'd call it a faux pas, but of course Clint goes, Alex Bregman would have made that play in his sleep, Chief.
Well, you know what? It's interesting.
But I agreed.
Clint had said something. It wasn't like a huge thing that I, but it's in the moment when they were talking about Alex Bregman, you know, not being at third and going to first, which, it, you know, they've messed around with that idea. I did, you know. Clint had said, well, hey, look, you know, Alex Bregman's defense at third isn't the reason you're going to lose the ALCS or something. And I don't tend to like statements like that because those are the moments that can very much win or lose you a big game. And so Bregman's defense has always just been such a huge asset for this team. And the Astros defense has been one of the reasons the pitchers are so good. They're very, very good defensively. So I think it is it's a glaring reminder that, man, this team has performed so well, you know, the last few games notwithstanding, they've performed so well over this last month and a half or so with a lot of minor league call-ups that shouldn't be in the major leagues right now. But those are also the blemishes that might keep you from really going as far as you could with your top end guys.
Yeah, no, you absolutely. I don't feel like you could even make the statement that Alex Bregman's defense or the lack thereof is going to be, it wouldn't be the difference in what would, you know, be what would get you there in the end. Like that matters. Like you look at that game set. If they're not up 10-0, he's out there playing third base, or you know what I mean. Like it's not.
Yeah.
He's only not in the game, and I don't know what you thought about the decision, but I actually agreed with the decision to pull Altuve and Bregman from that game, given what the score was, even though you were flirting with a no-hitter. Like, to me, I'm not going to say that the no-hitter doesn't have the same, like, historical relevance and reverence that it used to, but when you're the Astros and you're, I mean, and you've actually kind of been scuffling a little bit as of late.
Yeah.
You want to just secure that win, and you want your guys healthy, namely an Altuve who's well into his 30s now and Bregman who's been banged up for the last couple of weeks or so.
Right, and you're on this stretch of games with no break, and you're down a reliever. The relievers have been taxed. So there's a little bit of a balancing act there, too, where you do want Arrighetti to suck up as many innings as possible. You end up only having to use Brian King as a reliever, which is nice. But you also don't want to call it vanity, because nobody's going to begrudge a pitcher for wanting to get a no-hitter, but you got to balance out Arrighetti having pitched so many innings and everything else that you got to make some tough decisions sometimes. There's no way they would have pulled Arrighetti, but yeah, you got to get Altuve's had to have some rest days as of late. Bregman's got his elbow issue. I think it was fine. I don't think, is there anybody that's mad at Espada this morning for ruining Spencer Arrighetti's no-hitter?
Dude.
Other than Wickham himself?
Yeah. Other than Clinton Run. They were beside themselves that Alex Bregman wasn't out there to help secure the no-hitter and that Wickham was in that moment and had to face that, which I'm like,
Clint.
Dude. To hell with that no-hitter.
I never used to pay this much attention before, but are Clint and Ron, will they not mention the no-hitter while it's an ongoing no-hitter?
No, this was fun. So I was actually on with them in the 4 o'clock hour yesterday, and it was as the no-hitter was happening, and Ron kept saying it, and it was actually the YouTube chat in our audience that was giving them crap for it, you know, for actually saying
it.
And, you know, they like to needle Ron anyway. But that, of course, encouraged him to say it even more.
Ron, is that, you get that a little bit with where Callis won't say it.
Yeah.
You know, they'll very much accentuate. He's only, all he's given up today is four walks.
Yep.
But so you can tell. and that's enough. Robert Ford, I think Robert Ford and Ron are wired kind of same way. Because Robert Ford, I think, has a real grudge against people that try to tell him that he can't say it because he understands how ludicrous it all is. I treat it kind of like I do religion. I try not to judge anybody's, you know, beliefs or anything as long as it doesn't actively harm other people. And so likewise, I'm never gonna belittle your religion, whatever your faith is. I'm not gonna just, you know, I'm not gonna do that. Likewise, if your superstition is to not say anything about a no-hitter as it's ongoing, I will honor and respect that because it's no damage to me. It's kind of a fun little thing.
So I'm actually on the side of saying that it's a no-hitter. I don't think there's a problem with it. I don't believe in the superstition. And I used to be the thing that you're saying that you don't want to be or that you're not, like to be judgmental of those who are superstitious of it. Yeah. But I'll be honest, man, I did come around on it after I kind of heard Todd Callis's explanation and Jeff Blum's as well, because they're together on this. And I think they stand together on this. And it's kind of a baseball culture thing, but also like specific to TV, like in radio, I think you should say it. Uh-huh. I think you should say it. The Astros radio broadcast, I think, should say it. And in the role that Ron and Clint were playing, I think that they were in a position to say it. But I understand why you might not say it on a TV broadcast, because you can illustrate it with your graphics. I mean, you can just put it up there that there's no hits. And then you could say that, you know, there's another way. There are other ways to word that a guy hasn't given up any hits throughout an inning or throughout a game.
It kind of becomes fun too. You know, it's fun to talk around stuff. It's kind of like telling a dirty joke without making it explicitly dirty.
That's exactly
it's the suggestion is sometimes way more entertaining than just bluntly putting it out there.
Yeah.
So the limits, you know, limits and boundaries make life more interesting. So I appreciate what you're saying there about the TV broadcast. Yeah. When I used to be more argumentative about things in general, I used to get agitated about it. And now I just, I got other stuff I can yell at people about. I get that. Yeah, with radio, that it's harder to impart it necessarily with graphics or a tone of voice or anything like that. It's not quite the same.
Yeah, and for me, like, I'm a complete convert. I went from being the judgmental guy to now I actually like to watch the culture war, if you will, like the side that's like, you know, where I was ardently against or adamantly against the idea that you wouldn't say a no-hitter because somehow the broadcast and you saying it was going to impact the actual outcome of a game, which is very hard to play, and the things that they're doing are very hard to do, and just saying that it's a no-hitter or not saying it's a no-hitter is very easy to do and inconsequential. I went from that to saying, you know what, there is an art to what Callis and Blum are doing there when they're not saying it's a no-hitter, but everybody knows that it is. Everybody can tell that it is, and nobody is suffering from the experience of the broadcasters not explicitly saying that it's not one.
There's two things about yesterday's no-hitter that are interesting. One is that a lot of times no-hitters are boring games, and maybe that game was boring if you're a Phillies fan, but for the Astros, that was one of the more fun no-hitter, or well, if it had, like, let's say it had stayed a no-hitter. When you're scoring 10 runs, you've got just the right amount of drama on both sides. It's awesome. Like, Yordan hits 3 home runs. Altuve steals home in the first inning. And yet, also, you had a no-hitter going on the other side of it. So instead of some 1-0 or 2-0 no-hitter, you had an actually entertaining, for Astros fan, no-hitter. And the other part of it, too, though, is it's, you know, we do what you alluded to. Okay, the no-hitter has lost a little bit of its luster in some ways because the way pitching has changed so much. And yet, for the pitchers themselves, it's still something. It's something. Like, pitcher wins. We know that pitcher wins in this day and age are really, I don't want to say meaningless, but it's very clear. There's times, you know, where, remember that 1 year Verlander had gotten 6 weeks into the season without a win because he wasn't getting any run support, but he was pitching really, really, really well. You know that it's dicey. And yet Verlander himself will talk about his goals in terms of total number of wins and everything. It's just a nice, easy, simple thing you can latch onto and that people still talk about. So to get I do feel bad for Arrigetti that he had a chance at it and came very, very close. But I also don't begrudge Espada for kind of yanking it away from him.
The text line, Seth, the text line is saying that Ty Callis actually broke character yesterday. That he actually
did
broke
he?
Character
I didn't hear
at some
it.
Point. In, after the Dubon catch, that he said he saved the no-hitter. You know, obviously, Dubon had that amazing catch.
Okay.
I didn't catch that. I didn't realize
that. I didn't catch
because he never says it.
I was walking in and out of the room, and I was kind of listening for it because I heard him a couple times conspicuously mention the walks and the strikeouts, but no hit. Like, he didn't say hits at all or mention that. So I thought, I wonder when he broke. Maybe he popped that seal a while ago. I don't know.
Maybe so. He said, Payne, I'm Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast on Payne and Pendergast. Coming up next, the Texans have a roster for the most part. We'll give our final thoughts on that and more coming up next on Payne and Pendergast.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
You sit in traffic now, but later there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
And Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln at Katy Freeway. 1 mile west of the Beltway, exit Kirkwood, under the giant American flag.
Hey, happy for British, for him making our initial roster here. And one thing about British, the kid is tough, he's reliable, he's smart. And that goes a long way in this league. That plays anywhere. And he's shown that he can be dependable. And he's competed, and he's deserved the right to be on our team. So excited for him and his growth and his development this year.
That was Texans head coach D'Amico Ryans talking about undrafted free agent running back slash possibly fullback British Brooks. Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast here with Seth Payne on Payne and Pendergast. Seth, the last time you were on the air, the Texans did have a 53-man roster, but they had not added 12 players to their practice squad. We had not heard from from D'Amico Ryan's quite yet on British Brooks.
Yeah.
What do you think of? I position it this way. I thought British Brooks was going to make the team, but I thought he was going to be on this practice squad as opposed to actually making the 53-man roster. I do feel like it's a credit to, like, the fact that he is on the 53-man roster and that we're having the discussions that we're having about him possibly being a contributor to the team. Who knows if he actually sticks around past a couple of weeks? Like, the roster could change. But that he would make the 53 and that they would speak as highly of British Brooks as they are at this point going into the season, I think says a lot about the preseason and the training camp that he actually had. Yeah, I know you're impressed with him.
I think the competition there at running back, especially amongst the rookies, I think J.J. Taylor and Jawar Jordan, it wouldn't have been a shock if they'd stayed on the active roster. I think British Brooks' versatility and his ability that he showed to be a blocker is the biggest difference by far. I think the other two guys are more scintillating in terms of their potential for big plays or what have you. But I also, look, I think we're all impressed by British Brooks being way faster than you expect for a big guy. And just shiftier than you expect. But he can do something that those other two guys can't. Those guys are both like 185 pounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, British Brooks is 225 or so. He's a big old load that either as a short yardage back or as a blocker for, you know, any of those running backs. But I think of Damian Pierce especially, he does best with a fullback in the game, with a lead blocker. And British Brooks had shown some violence as a blocker that we haven't seen out of a Texans fullback in a while. And I think that this first few weeks especially, well, they've got, you know, before injuries mount up and everything, that they're going to, you know, I think they'll experiment and see what they have with him as a fullback. And also maybe they're hoping to get the best version of Damian Pierce. So if you want to almost think of this as an extended tryout for both British Brooks and Damian Pierce, which isn't, it's not a reckless experiment, but I think you can work some things in and hopefully they work out. If they don't, you can pivot.
Gosh, Seth, I'm rooting for Damian Pierce, but the thought of his success being tied to an undrafted running back who's converting into a fullback, And you know, kind of made the squad out of the, you know, kind of pulling up by his own bootstraps, so to speak.
Yeah.
Just makes me a little bit worried about Damian Pierce. Like, we went from Damian Pierce as a rookie being the focal point of an offense that was a terrible offense, granted, and was a terrible football team, I understand. But going from that to, hey, this tryout is kind of tied to how well he can play with or play behind or alongside this converted running back into fullback just doesn't make me feel good, man.
You know, a lot of this goes back to, because I don't like to get too wrapped up in the zone running scheme versus gap blocking, old school blocking, all that stuff. For one, because then there's a lot of people that just kind of, you know, it gets a little too technical. But it's also that going back to 2006 when Kubiak first got here, the old outside zone running team, where all they did was run outside zone, that's long gone. And the Texans under Gary Kubiak, but then especially once Kyle Shanahan tweaked everything, they're pretty diverse in all of the different plays they want to run. You just never want to run into a situation where, all right, if we have a running back there that the defense knows can only do so many things, it becomes a little too predictable. But There is also something to be said for teams that run the ball really well with old school leads and powers and everything else like that. There is an element of, like, we don't care if you know what's coming. The offense saying, all right, good. Oh, you know what's coming. We're going to hit you in the mouth. And I think they look at British Brooks as that kind of guy that, all right, you know what? Sure. Damian's not good at everything we run. So you're getting there's a smaller number of plays we're going to try here. But we're still going to hit you upside the head. You know, you can be a really good boxer, but if you get caught with the right punch, that's it for you.
Hey,
by another professional boxer. And there's a little bit of a bulldog mentality there.
Seth, that semi-viral clip of British Brooks just going heads up against that Rams defensive lineman,
yeah,
and like seeming to give a little shock to his system. And you showed this on your YouTube. You guys check this out on Seth's YouTube, where Seth actually highlights this. British Brooks hits that guy. This might have been your live stream. But he hits that guy, and he looks like he's ready to stand there and throw a punch.
He or had karate a combo chop ready.
Or whatever. like he's down for whatever at that point.
It was exactly like when a boxer is just still in that mode, and the guy's gone down, but he's still in attack mode, and he almost has to restrain himself from jumping on the dude. It's exactly what it looked like. I feel like British Brooks took boxing lessons at the Y back when he was a kid. They had the old school back when the father would take your kid out into the backyard and teach him something on the speed bag.
He was an early camp crush for not just myself, but for a lot of people. There were like people that watch your stream and people that listen to this station were really talking about British Brooks a lot more so than I feel like we were on the station. Dude's got some dog in him, and I think he pretty much described it here where he talks about being willing to play any position, running back, fullback, offensive line. Dude just wants to get out there and hit somebody.
Just very appreciative of just, you know, being a part of the team first and foremost, and just, you know, like I said, being very appreciative of Nick and Coach D'Amico just giving me this opportunity. And really, I'm down for whatever they need me at, to be honest. I mean, I don't care if I got to play center or line, you know, whatever they need me at, they want to hear a no from me.
Yeah, that spoken like a true undrafted free agent who, you know, and we'll play some of this later on. I mean, he's gone through his trials and tribulations with the game and his contemplation of possibly not playing, and has spoken about his love for the game. To go from like this dark place where British Brooks talks about being to now being on this football team, dude's out there willing to do whatever it takes.
Yeah, and he's a walk-on at UNC. Which, by the way, there's another little tell there, too, is that, you're like, look, UNC is a pretty tough school to get into academically, unless the football team really wants you, and then it's a little less tough. It's a little less tough. I was a beneficiary of treatment like that once back in the day. I was a pretty good high school football player back in the day, Brandon, and it helped me get into a school that maybe I wouldn't have otherwise gotten into. So
was North Carolina the school that had like its black athletes taking African American studies or something like that? I feel like I feel like that happened. Like they were
it
like,
wasn't,
you know what?
No, it was
just,
something.
Just come over and take the black classes.
It was something less. I think it was like something less challenging than that. In term, it was like basket weaving or something. Whatever the UNC version of basket weaving was, I can't recall exactly.
Yeah,
but yeah, they
get in where you fit in though.
Yeah, so he's a walk on, and he's like classic underdog story. And I think there's a lot of. I'm not making a player comp here, but the story of British Brooks. It feels a lot like Arian Foster, you know, like smart dude who wasn't necessarily all that highly coveted coming out of college to the point where you don't get drafted, and different style of running back and everything. But I could see British Brooks maybe like that's the story I have in mind for him. Whatever he becomes on this football team, that's the story. If you can end up being a story like that, man, it would be awesome because it's a find, especially in this day and age where nobody's spending high draft picks on running backs because you just don't know quite what to make of the position. If you get a guy like that on a rookie contract for 4 years, that could be nice. That could be nice.
Here's British Brooks on what motivated him.
You know, in college, going through that injury, you know, a lot of it was with my strength condition coach, who was actually my cousin, you know, AJ Blue. Like, he was there for me, checking in on me. It was always me and him. I also got a dog. She was there, you know, 24/7 pulling me around. I feel like I tell reporters this all the time. Like, I feel like my dog really helped me get back quicker because she's like 130 pounds and we live on the third floor, so I got to drag her up and down the stairs 3 times a day. So, like, I had a lot of good people in my circle, you know, around them times that, you know, I could lean on, and they were there for me.
That's a perspective for you. How about that? You're having to carry your dog around.
Crediting. Oh, he had said at the end of the interview what is. It's some kind of, he called it a bully, I'm guessing a bulldog, but I didn't catch what type of bully it was. But it's perfect. I feel like having the first name British, you know, if Sean were here, he would tell us about the British bulldog and the wrestling aspect to it and everything. But also having a dog that suggests what I had said. I never knew he had a bulldog. What I like is for fullbacks, I don't like these 6'3" hybrid tight end / fullbacks because I'll tell you, Brandon, as a defensive lineman or a linebacker, some of the worst pain you ever feel on a football field is when a 5'10" fullback gets you up under the chin and just unloads. Because those dudes have the highest strength per body weight and inches of height on the, like, pound for pound, they're usually the most explosive, strongest guys on the team. You know, those thick running backs are all, they're the ones you see squatting 600 pound, deep squats for reps and everything. And they catch you up under the chin, and it messes up the next quarter for you. Like, you just, you can't, you're evaluating, like, I know these days you're probably like, I should probably go get checked out for the protocol, man. I don't know. It's like, that's something that the 6'3" guys have a really hard time doing. That's why I love that image of British Brooks hitting that defensive lineman, because I've been there before. It sucks. And it adds a whole element of toughness to your team that I think can flow out. I think there could be an element of toughness with British Brooks that this Texans rushing offense hasn't had in a long time.
So I feel like they showed us their commitment to the fullback being a part of this team by keeping British Brooks and also seemingly converting him into a fullback. That was actually one of the underrated developments of yesterday's practice was British Brooks not only making the 53-man roster, but when you go out there, he's not working out with the running backs, but he's working out with the tight ends, or at least warming up with the tight ends.
Yeah.
And they warm up and stretch and everything similarly to the way that the fullbacks would, right? And so that was interesting. And then also when we see the practice squad that it's got Troy Hairston on it, like we already understood and like know the offense and know that the fullback plays a role in this offense. You don't necessarily have to do it, but it's something that they like to do. But then on top of that, I feel like they showed us their commitment to it by choosing British Brooks as sort of the nastiest dog of them all, out of all the guys that could, you know, capably play the position.
Right.
But then also keeping Troy Hairston on the practice squad as well. And I know he didn't necessarily redeem himself per se in his last showing out there aside from his touchdown, but has now played the position and is at least an option there, and shows their commitment to having a fullback.
And I wonder about Troy Hairston, man, just going back and watching that last preseason game again, I wonder if he's not injured or something, because he's been a work in progress as a fullback, but it was rough. It was a really rough day for him. Not just at fullback, but in special teams. Yeah, so I wonder if he was nursing something, because it was as bad as I've seen, and it's not typical of the way he plays. So I'm guessing that there's potentially some kind of injury issue he is working through.
So I want to get to this with you later on in the show, but I'm gonna ask you now because I am curious. Now that we have the 53-man roster and for the most part a practice squad, you feel like what would you say are the holes, if any, on this roster? Like, I feel like we're all confident. Everybody's really excited about the season. For the most part, we all got positive feelings about the Texans. But if you were to poke holes in it and say that there's a flaw or a chink in the armor, where would you say it is on the Texans right now?
I think right now, a lot of it's at the backup positions. Like, I like Blake Fisher a lot, but I wouldn't feel comfortable right this moment if he has to start at left or right tackle. And it has nothing to do. I really am genuinely bullish on him. I think he's got a lot of potential. I think he's shown some really good things. But he's a guy that, you know, the story on him coming out in the draft was, wow, if he had stayed in one more year, he probably would have been a first rounder. He needs some development. So right now is like that senior season of development that he was going to be getting. And sometimes those guys develop very quickly once they get thrown into regular season games and you get 65 snaps per game. Because in the preseason, you only get so many full-speed reps. So I'm hesitant about that right now. I think the safety position in general, a lot of it depends on just how quickly Kalen Bullock comes along. And I feel good about having MJ Stewart and Eric Murray, but there's still uncertainty there. And then obviously linebacker. As long as Christian Harris is in this Kyle Tucker zone, I don't feel awesome about the linebackers. You know what I kept reminding myself yesterday, Brandon, was that they didn't have Alshire last year. So last year they had Christian Harris and then a lot of the same guys that are still on the roster right now rotating through at the linebacker positions. So it wasn't pretty in the Colts game. Jonathan Taylor had 188 yards rushing. But so you had Christian Harris, who had developed into a really good player by then. But Jen, you had a lot of other guys. So it, obviously they're able to win that game. And now you've got Al Shire. Well, you don't have Christian Harris. So the loss of right now Christian Harris and Danico Autry, I look at those things as, all right, man, they can get by. They can be a good defense. To be genuinely elite as a defense and to really blow people away, I think you need both those guys back. So I'm not at, you know, five alarm fire status yet, but I'm just still kind of just, I'm nervous about the Kyle Tucker status of Christian Harris.
He is Seth Payne. I am Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast. Coming up next on Headlines, let's hear a bit more from D'Amico Ryans and the players. That's next on Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
It is Payne and Pendergast. Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast, rolling along with Seth Payne. And yesterday, Seth, we got to hear from Texans head coach D'Amico Ryans about finalizing this roster. And I know there were some things that were, I feel like, more surprising to others than what were surprising to you and Sean. Because I know the Noah Brown cut did not catch you guys off guard at all. It felt like it did catch others off guard. But I think when you hear how they talk about cuts and Noah Brown being the most notable of them, or one of the more notable ones of them, it does kind of give you some idea, at least to me, some idea of how much they did value him and how much I think they really actually wanted it to work out with him. Like, he just wasn't healthy enough to be on the team.
I think this was a genuinely painful cut for the Texans. I think there were a few in the wide receiver. I think it was really probably, I'd guess it was a disproportionate percentage of their time in making the cuts was spent on the wide receivers. And they've got seven wide receivers right now, which is a lot, but then you include Steven Sims in that as a special teams guy. But they were going to have to cut somebody that they really liked. And maybe if John Metchie hadn't started catching the ball consistently, it would have been a little bit easier, because that would have been very specifically performance-based. If they had to, you know, hope that they could put John Metchie or trade him away or something, then that would have been difficult for them, but at least that would have been performance-based. With Noah Brown, he's a guy that did everything you could have hoped for him to do last year, and had the 300-plus yards receiving over the course of two games, and it's just that he's been injured. And I think doesn't necessarily, because of his injury history, have the same upside as some of the younger guys. So I felt for those guys. I felt for Caserio and D'Amico. It's hard. As D'Amico said the other day, this was really hard this year compared to last year. There were just more guys that you felt were capable of helping your football team out and that you'd grown attached to over the course of the year. And I think Noah Brown was clearly one of those guys that it was kind of painful to have to make that call.
This was D'Amico Ryans talking about the process of cutting the roster down to 53 and how he feels about the team that they have now.
And on the roster cuts and decisions we make is definitely tough, right? We'd love to keep everyone. Loved all the guys that we were able to work with. All those guys, right, belong in the league. They work the right way, made of the right stuff. So, you know, we're hopeful that, you know, we can get some guys back on our practice squad. If not, hopefully those guys land on another team somewhere. So pulling for all those guys, all the difficult decisions, difficult conversations we had to have, right, just still pulling for all those guys to make it in the NFL.
And obviously, you know, Noah Brown ended up signing with the Washington Commanders later on in the day.
Yeah.
You can tell that there was a little bit of, hey, there are some guys that we want to keep around here.
I like the idea of getting cut by D'Amico Ryans. There's some coaches that you would more prefer to get cut by than others. There's some guys that have the human touch or so. I would say, honestly, going back to Bill O'Brien and that year on Hard Knocks, I was honestly impressed with the way Bill O'Brien talked to the guys. Now, he doesn't have the same personality as D'Amico, but I thought Bill O'Brien did the best thing, which was the ones we saw, at least, he was giving constructive advice. I would call it criticism if you want, but basically telling the guys they cut exactly what they, you know, were not, you know, why they were doing it and what maybe a guy could improve, which is a hell of a lot nicer to a kid. You know, that's actually helping the kid if he wants to hear the message. It's hard sometimes if you're being cut, your brain's not all, you know, your brain's a little foggy. So I appreciated that. But with D'Amico, I think likewise, I'm sure he does the same thing. But I think, you know, just if you can tell that the guy is genuinely pained to be cutting you, that goes a long way. When I was cut by Gary Kill, first time I was ever cut in the NFL was going into my 11th season, and it was Gary Kubiak. He'd called me on the phone, and I genuinely felt in that moment like, man, this is a good dude. And I by the end, I was trying to give him a pep talk about what a good job he was doing as a coach. And, cause I felt like he was, I could hear that it was hard for him and he felt bad, or at least he was doing a good job of faking it about having to cut me. And it made me feel nice. And then I felt like he needed a pick me up. So I gave him a pep talk.
So I thought that one of the more experienced receivers was going to get cut, Seth. Or yeah. Traded or let go in some capacity. I just assumed for whatever reason it was going to be Robert Woods. And this is just the problem with assumptions and not knowing, right. or not giving enough credit to the process of the preseason and training camp. But going into this thing, I would have told you that, hey, they probably get rid of Robert Woods one way or another, and that John Metchie and Xavier Hutchinson are in a competition with each other. And it turned out that Noah Brown ended up being the guy that was on the outside looking in because he wasn't available, and all the rest of those guys were. Oh, and by the way, on top of that, like, Robert Woods has plenty of tape out there, right? He's kind of an established made man. But between Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie, you talk about maximizing your reps or making the most of your ops, right? Like,
yeah.
They absolutely did that. It shows you how much the process actually mattered. The preseason and really the entire training camp in the case of Xavier Hutchinson, but both of them showing up at different times at relevant points, I feel like edged out Noah Brown, a player that they really liked. It shows you how much they like those guys when they can edge out a guy that they really wanted to keep.
It's one part of the dynamic between D'Amico and Caserio that I've really liked, and why I was optimistic about it working out between those two, just kind of professionally and interpersonally, is that Caserio, and I would say this is one of the good things that people, it's one of the good things you should bring from being with the Patriots, instead of all these other coaches that think their main message is like, oh, I've just got to be a jerk. I think the one thing about Caserio is that sometimes personnel people are way more concerned with traits and upside and everything else. And the clash will be between the personnel people who value that stuff versus the coaches who really want dependability. And sometimes the coaches will really love this guy. It happens with defensive linemen a lot, like with a guy like Kurt Heinisch. The coaches will really love a guy because he's dependable. He's not going to screw up my game plan, you know. And the scouts are like, why the hell do you like that guy? I feel like Caserio and D'Amico are a little bit more of like mind on that. Caserio, having been a coach, helps a lot. And I think being in the New England system, that's something that they tend to value. Is, all right, I can trust this guy. He's not going to screw up my game plan. So I think that's where Robert Woods, in addition to the veteran leadership and all of that, you know, if they've been without Robert Woods, then you've got Stephon Diggs in there as the one guy who's an older guy you can be leaned on. But you don't, and it's been awesome with Stephon Diggs, but I think Robert Woods and Stephon Diggs have just maybe slightly different personalities.
Maybe just a little bit.
And I say this without saying that Stephon Diggs is going to be a distraction or anything. There's something about a level-headed, you know, a guy that's just like the consummate, mature old vet that can kind of keep it calm when everybody else is freaking out. I feel like Robert Woods has that in his bag.
What do you think about since you mentioned it, what do you think about my theory? Because you and I have not talked about this, but I've mentioned this on the air before. With Stephon Diggs and his, let's call him, quarterback disputes or hissy fits, whatever you want to call them. What do you make of me actually being on Stephon Diggs' side on all of it? Like to me, here's where I'm at.
Yeah.
I have yet to just assume that whatever dispute existed with Stephon Diggs and let's just say Josh Allen, or Stephon Diggs and let's just call it the Bills offense at large.
Yeah. Right?
Like, I am not under the assumption that Stephon Diggs was on the wrong side of the argument or on the wrong side of history. I think he is more so a product, the conversation at least is a product of the way we talk about wide receivers. So if a wide receiver pitches a fit, never mind if he's right or wrong, he's a diva, he's an issue. But I'm not so convinced that he's on the wrong side of the
argument. All right, this is the thing, and I'm not trying to be on the fence here. I think that the root cause of some of the disputes was very much on Josh Allen. Like, Josh Allen is not as advanced mentally as a quarterback as C.J. Stroud is right now as a second-year quarterback. He doesn't process the game the same way that C.J. Stroud does. Doesn't mean that he's better or worse or anything else than C.J. Stroud. He's just not on that same level. And I think when wide receivers get disgruntled, except for the genuine divas who are just all about themselves, I think generally when wide receivers get disgruntled, yes, it's partly because they're not getting the ball, but it's because they're not getting the ball when they're supposed to get the ball. You know, a diva is a guy who on any given play is the third option, doesn't get the ball, and he's upset about it. A genuinely reason for disgruntled thing is when you are the first read and everything is going the way it's supposed to, and for some reason the QB just doesn't get it. And I think there's a little bit of that sometimes with Josh Allen. And I know what you're saying. I think that with Stephon Diggs, there is still the social media side of it.
Yeah.
It's the cryptic stuff that just adds, it amps any sideline disagreement or anything up a millionfold when you start, and then your brother's weighing in on it, saying that my brother needs to get up and out of there.
Yeah.
With no response from Stephon. It's just that, I think that's where it, if he could just keep from doing that, I think a lot of that never sees the light of day. Because then it's like, we got into it on the sideline, but everything's cool. And then nobody knows anything. But when you get the cryptic tweets or Instagram posts, then you know that Stephon Diggs is still thinking about it. And it's obviously something that's not just in the moment. It's something that extends beyond it.
Yeah, I do think that whatever level of volatility exists there, Seth, that D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud are equipped and mature enough as leaders to kind of deal with it. Now, how much of an issue it actually becomes or is, I guess, remains to be seen. They haven't played a down of football yet or like real football. So we'll see, but I'm hoping the leadership is in place and the infrastructure is in place to withstand whatever it is, if there's anything.
I think there's definitely something to the dynamic of, like, from the very beginning, they described it as, like, Stephon Diggs is the big brother and Josh Allen is the little brother. And there, in relationships like that, sometimes it's hard for the quarterback to genuinely come into his own. And that's another area where I feel like C.J. Stroud is just way ahead of the curve in terms of leadership and maturity and everything compared to a young Josh Allen. So that's, I think, like, C.J.'s just kind of freakishly mature on the interpersonal side of leadership. And I think he's got probably a higher capacity for disagreement and discord and be able to kind of like, you know, the old dudes in your life where you're like, I wish I could be as patient as him.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can just, the guy that'll just let somebody flip out and let it run its course and then we'll have a discussion about it. CJ, I feel, is already kind of that old head guy.
CJ Stroud, incredibly mature, ahead of the curve, but what makes him so miserable to defend? We'll discuss that next on Pain and Pendergast Sports Radio 62.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!